Welcome to The Rock Fight, where we speak our truth, slay sacred cows, and sometimes agree to disagree. This is an outdoor podcast that aims for the head. I'm Colin True, and today, longtime outdoor media journalist, editor, and founder of the cycling-focused Escape Collective, Kaylee Fretz, is here to take a deeper look at what's happening in the world of outdoor media. Last month, Mountain Gazette's Mike Rogge and I took a look at the latest headlines that come out of mainstream media and found silver linings for the future. And looking at our outdoor world, the landscape is also changing. The legacy outdoor media titles we've all known for a long time don't carry the weight that they used to. And as print titles like Mountain Gazette, Adventure Journal, and Hi Hey Hello grow, so do the presence of paid subscription-based digital outlets like Escape Collective, which got its start last March and runs completely supported by reader subscriptions. Kaylee has spent most of his time in the cycling and outdoor media world as an editor at Velo News and then as editor-in-chief of Cycling Tips before launching Escape Collective and has seen the changes in the media landscape firsthand. During our conversation, we hit on the current state of outdoor media, how competition with large tech platforms has changed media over the past two decades, as well as what's in store for Escape Collective after a successful first year. Welcome back to The Rock Fight, where today we're talking about the future of outdoor media with Kaylee Fretz. All right, Kaylee Fretz, welcome to the show, man. Thanks for coming on. I can't speak. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. It's good to join you. We're going to talk media, my favorite thing, the only thing I really
it's all
think
you think about, not cycling. Cycling's just replace much. Cycling with whatever medium you want, and it's as long as it's media based, you're good. Is that kind of where you're at?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was a reporter for a long time, I was a journalist for a long time, and now I run a media company, and it turns out that. I only have so much bandwidth, you know, like I only have so much space up there, and the space that I used to hold the names of random professional cyclists and like who won the Tour de France in whatever year and things like that, that's all been replaced now by how to keep a media business afloat. So, you know, it keeps me engaged.
That's like age too, right?
Yeah,
I mean, I definitely like I'm pushing 50 and I'm definitely starting to have the moments of like just my daughter, like who's 18. She'll be like, yeah, remember like this thing that happened and you said this. And I'm like, I have zero recollection of it. I remember getting mad at like my parents probably around her age. Like, how do you not remember that? Like, that's like a formative memory for me. And you're like, I have no clue what that is. It's weird.
My 2.5-year-old daughter remembers things better than I do. So yeah, that's.
I do want you to settle a bet for me because before we started recording, we were talking about the new helmets that are making the kind of stir on social media, the crazy looking helmets. And I know you guys are going to cover that on your pod. And I don't want you to spoil anything from your pod. But Emily Holland, who comes on the show quite a bit, she and I were literally texting this morning because she is a proponent of Crocs and I am a Crocs hater. And I sent her that picture of those helmets and said, these are the Crocs. Of helmets. And she's like, yeah, but I bet it makes them go faster. And I said, you know, I don't think it's worth it. I don't care how much faster I would go. So I guess really more the question for you is, would you wear that helmet?
Oh, absolutely. Me, absolutely not. I mean, but I'm also not trying to win the Tour de France. So I think if I was trying to win the Tour de France, I might wear it. It's an aesthetic sport, right? So like, you know, you gotta look fast to go fast, I think is one of the phrases. So yeah, I could see riders. It was launched this week, this new ugly Giro. They all had to wear it. Like the team forced them to wear it the first couple days. But I could see riders going back.
Can you imagine? You're on the bus, right? You're rolling up to the race and like the team, you know, the equipment guy's like, all right, boys or girls or whoever it is, like, got your helmets. You're like, what the hell?
Oh God. I mean, honestly, it's so, if you haven't seen this, just go open like any cycling page on Instagram. And it's like the only thing that cycling can talk about for the last 48 hours. It is so absurd looking. It's like you stuck like a, you know, great white shark nose on your forehead, basically. It's so absurd looking that I think even the riders were given a bit of sort of like special dispensation to make fun of it, you know, because there are riders on these teams who are literally making fun of the helmet that they were just handed by a sponsor, which is not something you get very often.
Seriously.
In pro cycling.
All right. Well, we're not here to talk about bike helmets. We are going to talk some media, like you said, because I reached out to you because we're kind of at this crossroads, like where the outdoor media landscape has changed or is changing. I was talking a bit with Mike Rogge from Mountain Gazette a few weeks ago, and, you know, who's a print guy. We've talked a lot about print lately on this pod. So I want to talk to somebody who's a little bit more in the digital game. And as someone who spent a long time in active and outdoor media, I guess I want to start with maybe not specifically your site. We'll get to that. But what's your kind of state of the union on outdoor media as we sit here in 2024?
I mean, It's the State of the Union is bad. It's ugly. It's ugly out there. I shouldn't say that. It is. We are in an extinction level event for a lot of media right now, right? Because the structural underpinnings of particularly the digital media landscape are crumbling. Now, I would say that like part of the reason why the print folks are maybe feeling that a little bit less is because this happened to print 15, 20 years ago, right? So Mike, the fact that Mike has been successful, he's gotten through the extinction event and he's out the other side, right? Digital media is in it right now. I mean, you know, the list of shutdown media titles just in the last year, 18 months is so long.
Last like 6 weeks.
We could literally just list it. Yeah, like we could just sit here listing it for the rest of the show, right? Even in the last 6 weeks, like you say, that there's been a whole new pile of them, Vice and all the rest. Even these titles that were like Vice was the darling of the 2010s, right? Yeah. They were the ones that figured out the algorithms, that figured out SEO, that figured out the way of reaching audiences in that sort of like social peak social era. And you know, it, for all intents and purposes is going to be gone, right?
Right.
It's going to be just gone, wiped off the face of the earth. It's going to be a social media. What did the CEO said something about pivoting to social or something like that. Some really stupid
advice.
Decision. Yeah. Advice. Let's pivot to the thing, with an algorithm we can't control that makes that's really, really hard to monetize that. Anyway, we don't need it.
I know we used to have an HBO show, you know, like half hour, but I think we can get all this done on Threads, you know?
Well, they fire all the reporters and lay off all the reporters, lay off all the journalists. Anyway, we don't need to sort of maybe relitigate that because it's really obvious that it's ugly right now for a lot of media in general, and outdoor media, I think specifically. The analogy that I have sort of used is one of a wildfire because I think it works for outdoor folks. We kind of get it. And, you know, we're in the middle of the fire right now where a lot of stuff is burning up, right? A lot of old growth is burning up. A lot of sort of these legacy titles are disappearing. You know, I worked for a title up until November of 2023 that doesn't exist anymore. Just straight up doesn't exist anymore. It was folded into a group at Outside now called Velo. Technically, they also killed Velo News at the same time. Peloton Magazine, which was also an Outside property, killed about a year earlier. So like, that's just the three that I personally worked with in the last 2 years. Three of those are now gone, right? So I am simultaneously like deeply pessimistic and somewhat hopeful that we can kind of, you know, all these interesting, cool little independent media houses, niche publications, whether it's, you know, whether it's Mike in print or us in digital and cycling, like all these sort of little things that pop up because we were given essentially, and this is, I guess, kind of unfortunate and cynical, but kind of given the space by the collapse of the things that came before. And again, you can litigate why those things collapsed and whose fault that is and all these other things until the cows come home. But at the end of the day, the reality is they're gone, right? CycloTips is gone. VeloNews is gone. If I'm speaking specifically in the cycling space. And for myself and my crew over here, that's an opportunity.
I'm definitely optimistic. Because like you said, I'm curious what's going to pop up. I mean, that's definitely why, you know, we've had a pretty cool first year over here doing this podcast. And I think part of that is because there really wasn't anything else like it happening, you know, like not to pat myself too much on the back, but that definitely feels like, I don't know, it feels like we're definitely heading potentially to a good place.
Yeah. I mean, small stuff, right? Small stuff. Like what's getting hollowed out is the middle. Yeah. It's the sort of 30 to 50 person organizations, or even like the 30 to 200 person organizations, really. Which is unfortunately where a lot of the journalism happens, right? It's where a lot of really important stuff happens. You have to be incredibly lean. We don't have any significant overhead. We don't have offices. We don't have any of this stuff. We don't have that many people on staff that aren't directly creating content. Everybody on our entire team is either making content. They're either writing stuff or shooting stuff or whatever, or they're doing something else that's directly related to essentially like member service, right? So for example, we just launched just yesterday, we launched a game, super fun. It's like a grid style, you know, kind of tests your knowledge of pro cycling. That is a perfect example of like, okay, that's not actually, it's technically not content, but the person that is responsible for that type of product, that's essentially a member service, right? Everybody on the crew is entirely focused on that one very narrow thing. And that allows us to, you know, remain nimble, again, remain lean and survive basically off of nothing but membership dollars, which is not something that I think would have been possible even a couple of years ago. And it's not something that's possible if you have an organization of 100 people. Right. Like you can't make enough membership money to survive off of that. But if we, you know, we have 15 people, right? So, you know, payroll into seven figures, but not that far into seven figures. And one that, yeah, we're inches away from profitability right now, with a trajectory that has us confident enough that we, you know, like I've got an open slot that I'm hiring for right now, for example. So yeah, I think that's the future. I think the future, at least in the near term, is very small or very big. I think it's media has been a bad business for about right. 20 years.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, it's so even though I describe an extinction level event right now, like it's just the sort of acceleration of something that's been happening for a while.
Well, the meteor hit Earth when everyone's like, hey, we're just going to put all of our stuff we charge everyone for right. free on the internet in the year 2000 or whatever. Like, who thought that was a great idea for us?
You know, yeah, like, and you can't put that genie back in the bottle necessarily. Although we're currently trying, right. you know, like we are. yeah, I mean, the free media thing is a really interesting topic to me, because like philosophically I don't love that we have a paywall, right? Like we have what's called, you know, we have a sure. metered paywall, right? So people get, it actually changes depending on your propensity to pay, but you know, you get somewhere between like 3 and 5 or 6, sometimes even more, stories in a given month before we drop the paywall on you, right? And mm-hmm. that's very purposeful. Like one, you have to sort of understand what you're getting. You have to get a taste of the product before you're going to pay for it, right? So just from a pure right.
yeah.
acquisition standpoint, you kind of have to do it that way. But also sort of philosophically, I don't love the idea of an internet that's closed off to only people who can pay $8 a month for lots of different things to get the content they want, right? Like I don't love that.
Right.
In many ways, an advertising driven internet, which is what we had for the last 20 years, is the ideal for, you know, for access for people, for making sure that people can read the stuff and listen to the stuff and view the stuff that they want to consume. But we have been systematically screwed by big platforms. Media has been systematically screwed by Google and Facebook and all the rest. And,
right.
and when I say systematically, it's not that I'm thinking somebody sat down in 2012 and mapped this out, although it wouldn't surprise me. But you know, just to like really brief you kind of briefly kind of walk you through the issues here is basically, you know, these we came into the digital era, and all of a sudden you went from, okay, you've got 100,000 print subs, and that is a really strong business. Mm-hmm. 100,000 people, lots of people. That's a really strong business. We got into this space mostly because of the traffic that Facebook was sending, the traffic that Google was sending, the traffic that these big platforms were sending, where the only numbers that actually mattered were 7 or 8 figures, right? So 100,000 print subs, 100,000 mm-hmm. people was now nothing, right? The place where I worked previously, right. we were many millions of uniques every single month. And that was enough for a business that was, you know, making a couple million bucks a year, right? And barely breaking even, right?
Jesus.
So yeah, right. you just sort of do the math on the value of each one of those people, each one of those members of the audience, you could say, just decreasing and decreasing and decreasing. And this sort of artificial inflation of all the metrics around digital media. Because essentially we were trying to compete with tech platforms. We're trying to compete with Facebook, because if you're a marketing manager and you can spend money on social, you can spend money in endemic media, you want somewhat similar CPM on those two things. You want somewhat similar hit rate, right?
Sure.
Like, yeah, you maybe want to support the media, but you also have to get results. So we're competing with these giant tech platforms, which means we had to find numbers that allowed us to compete with these giant tech platforms. Now, what happened in the last couple of years is, and again, this is, I'm sure there's some marketing folks out there that might view this a bit differently, but this is from a media perspective. What happened in the last couple of years is all that traffic that was sort of artificially inflating what we thought was a big audience started to go away. So the platforms, yeah. Facebook, Google, they started just slowly turning off the taps, right? Where I worked previously, Cycling Tips, roughly 25% of our traffic was coming in from Facebook. Less than 1% of my traffic today comes in from Facebook. Right. So that was roughly 25% of you know, millions of uniques a month. Right. And now we're at less than 1% of a site that's honestly also quite smaller. So the raw number is even tinier than that. So basically what I'm saying, the long convoluted way of saying the platforms artificially inflated how much traffic you needed to stay alive as media. And then as part of that, the amount of money we were getting out of each one of those users slowly decreased, right? Because we had essentially a supply problem. And supply going up. Everyone's traffic is going up and up and up and up and up every single year, which meant that CPMs were going down every single year, programmatic getting worse and worse and worse for media every single year. And now we're at these sort of like just minuscule amounts of money per eyeball, right? And then the taps get turned off. And so you've got a minuscule amount of money per eyeball and no traffic. And that's why we're in this extinction event right now. It's why Vice can't survive. It's why most media out there that exists in that middle space in between the Tiny Sprouts and the New York Times is suddenly looking at this going, well, fuck, like we were okay as long as traffic was going up every single year. But now Facebook and Instagram and all the rest don't want to share our stuff if it has a link in it, because they're in the, you know, they're all following TikTok around and they're in the distraction economy now. And they basically want to keep you on their platform forever. And they don't, if you put a link in your Facebook post, they don't want to send you away from Facebook anymore. Right. And so that's why we don't get any traffic. And you have this horrible combination of, you can't make money off of each person and you have fewer people coming to your site. And so this is the result. Right. And that's why I think the only way forward is to go straight to the audience and to go to the people that like your stuff, you know, go to the 5,000 or 10,000 or 20,000 people that love what you do and see if they'll give you money for it, because that's such a, it aligns the incentives between the editorial and the audience. And it's such a more stable way to do it. It's such a You're not building your business on the algorithms of others if you do it that way. And I think that's what underpins our entire concept of media at this point. You know, I'll tell you right now that like I said, we're a seven figure business. My payroll is about 85% of that total cost. You know, we do that off the back of a sort of like core audience and a paying audience in the tens of thousands, not the hundreds of thousands, right? And again, to step back to what I was saying before, to do the same thing, to make as much revenue under a different model, that would have to be millions.
Right. Yeah.
Right. And that's the fundamental shift. I tell our editors all the time that I would rather you write a story that 150 people are stoked on, absolutely love, than a story that 50,000 people got to by, you know, Google searching something, showed up and never came back. Right. The latter is not, it's not the future of media. It's that's when you get into that type of content, you're back fighting Google and Facebook for ad revenue. And I just don't want to fight Google and Facebook for ad revenue because they're much better at it than we are, right? They won.
And they will continue to win.
they beat media. I mean, you know, Google's just a toll booth in between every single person on the planet and the stuff that they want, right? Yeah. It's the most brilliant business model maybe ever. And like, how do you compete with that? And I think that was one of the real problems for media in the last 10 years was this notion that we could try to continue to compete with these platforms when we can't. Right. We just cannot. And so that's like, we also just announced about 2 weeks ago that we're going to do another year ad free, basically. This is something that, you know, we kind of went back and forth on a bunch, and I'm not anti-ad, as you can probably tell from the way that I'm describing things here, but I am anti-bad business decisions.
Sure, yeah, there you go.
and for us at this point in time, chasing ads around would be a bad business decision. I would have to go hire a salesperson and probably an ad ops person. It would add a whole bunch of cost. And, you know, given the ad environment right now, I'm not sure we'd get all of that back. Yeah. Or if we did, we'd probably hardly make any real profits on it, and complicates the business. And it makes our pitch to the audience, who are our actual customers, even more difficult, because we can't say, hey, there's no ads. This is the cleanest website you're going to find on the internet. You know, nothing's going to flash at you. Nothing's going to autoplay. You don't have to deal with any of this nonsense. That's a really strong pitch for us. So when I do the math on that, it's a pretty relatively easy decision to not do ads again.
By the way, it was like, you know, I did get a membership just to kind of make sure I wanted to, you know, look at the site and everything. And I'm like, it's just because it's not that it looks lovely, but it's also like, it's shockingly not busy. And not that, like, there's plenty of websites that have ads that aren't busy, but, like, it's like you're, like, a whole other another level of simplicity. You know what I mean? Like, wait, I can just click on any of these, and it'll be something that I might want to read? You know?
and that's – I come back to the alignment of incentives, and this is something that gets talked about a fair amount in media. But it's the other reason why I think going to an ad model – while, you know, possibly necessary, it does start to misalign the incentives between us and the reader, right? Because it just means that we're not working for them as much anymore. And I think that as long as we can, we're going to try to sort of maintain that sort of cleanliness of our business model. That said, you know, refusing to diversify where we get our revenue from is not a good way to stay in business particularly long. So I you know, never say never. And again, not anti-ad in sort of any sort of philosophical sense. I just think that we can create a better product without advertising in that sort of traditional way.
So I guess to start wrapping it up, like, what's the ceiling? Like, what do you do? Well, I know it's 1 year, you're crossing these milestones, but like on your best days, when you're like, oh, this is it. Like, where do you see it all going? I mean, are you going to expand into other categories? Do you think you'll add other?
Yeah. I don't know. We're definitely working through that stuff right now. My gut says, like, actually, do we have to get really big? Like, do we have to be enormous here? Like, do we have to scale? A lot of me is like, no, like, let's pay the very talented people that I work with above market rate to do their job better than anybody else can do it. And let's be happy in our little space right here. The other side of me, because I'm an ambitious person who likes challenges and likes doing things like that, is like, no, fuck that. Like, let's get huge. Let's be awesome. Let's take over all of outdoor media. Like, no, like, I think that the reality will be somewhere in between, right? So the way that I'm thinking about it right now, and I know that the way that Wade is, my co-founder, Wade Wallace, who's also the founder of Cyclotips back in the day, the way he's thinking about it as well, is like, we kind of, not that we perfect what we're doing in cycling, but we understand what we're doing in cycling. Right. We understand what works. We understand what doesn't work. We understand how to pull the levers we need to pull to build a sustainable business within a niche sport. When we understand that and we build a playbook around that, then we decide if we start to apply that playbook elsewhere. Right. So I think in the near term, like, I mean, literally even smaller than that, we start off with, can we figure out road cycling, which is basically the first year, like the niche within the niche. Right. And then we're dabbling in mountain bikes, and I think we'll do a lot more in mountain bikes soon. I'm hiring a tech editor right now, in particular, somebody who is likely focused on more off-road stuff and is comfortable on a podcast and can do video and things like that. If anyone's out there, head over to the careers page.
We'll link it in the show notes.
I'm looking for somebody really good, right? Because you need to make, if I hire you, you need to make stuff so good that people will pay for it. That's a tricky thing. I think that like stepping into mountain bikes and stepping into sort of more off-road stuff is, you know, step 1A for us, or 1B maybe, and figuring that out. But yeah, I could see us again, taking the playbook and applying it elsewhere. Like, could we build with what we know? Could we build a running site or a skiing site, or like, do we even go wicked small, right? Like, you can hear the wicked. I am also from Boston. long time ago, but I was joking with my wife the other day, because we're both big cross country skiers, mm-hmm. big Nordic skiers here in Durango, and you know, it was our last race of the weekend, last race of the year last weekend, and you're like, could you build a Nordic skiing site? Like, the audience is vanishingly small for a Nordic skiing website. But I only need about 1,000 people to cover the cost of that. 1,000 people, right? The Berkey, two weekends ago, 3 weekends ago, up in Wisconsin, has many thousands of people that race that race, right? So if you could get 20% of Berkey entrants to give you, you know, $7 a month for the best Nordic skiing coverage on the planet, would that be a functional business? I'm going to couch all this in the fact that there's a couple sites out there that I really love, like Faster Skier and
there is competition
that I like. I'm not coming for you, Faster Skier. You do a very good job. I'm literally just thinking out loud, like, what spaces could you get into with this model that would make sense? Right. So I think that's the near term future. You know, there's a lot of other things that sort of keep a business like this afloat. Like I said, we just launched a game that seems really inconsequential maybe from the outside, but I can tell you right now that like, we've already gotten more email addresses off of that game in 24 hours than I got off anything else in probably the last 2 months, right? And email addresses to me are gold, right? Because then I can email you and tell you to sign up. I'm going to email you. You're either going to leave. You're going to unsubscribe, or you're going to pay me.
That's the greatest like metric, right?
We're going to have a, yeah, exactly. So just emails and sort of like recurring things to bring people back again, kind of New York Times model, right? It's our Wordle. We're about to launch classifieds, next week. I don't know when exactly this podcast is going up,
tomorrow.
But probably by the time you, yeah. Okay, so like pretty soon after you listen to this episode, you know, there's going to be classifieds on the site. Again, that's another just means of getting people in the door every day and having sort of like ongoing community. And we can provide something to our members for that, because we can give you like your ad is higher up and things like that for being members. So there's lots of different things that are not pure editorial that I think will contribute to the success of long term of the business, and are also then again part of the playbook, right? So how do we build this thing within our space that we truly understand, and then we decide if we want to scale it, and that decision has not been made and probably won't be made for a while.
All right, man, we can wrap it up there. I appreciate you coming on.
Sure thing. I've really enjoyed it. It got me thinking about some stuff. I apologize for yammering extensively.
It's a podcast. It's what we do.
That's true, actually. Yeah, that's kind of the thing. Hugely enjoyable. Appreciate you having me on. Head over to escapecollective.com. Sign up now. There we go, right?
They will link in the show notes. Play the game. But keep an eye out for the things you were just promising that are coming up. A lot of good stuff happening, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah. 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 Yeah, check out the site. I think that's the big thing. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, bud. All right, that's the show for today. But before you move on to that next podcast, can you please be sure you are subscribed to the show by clicking follow on whatever podcast app you are listening to us on? And if you want to reach out, you want to pick a fight with The Rock Fight, send your emails to myrockfight@gmail.com. The Rock Fight is a production of Rock Fight LLC. I'm Colin True. Thanks for listening. And back again for another go-round. He's been on that ledge countless times, and he knows what that feels like. It's Chris DeMakes with the Rock Fight fight song. We'll see you next time, Rock Fighters. Rock Fight.